Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Pat Schlarbaum. And today we will be discussing Maria Pearson, a mother and a member of the Turtle Clan of the Yankton Nation of the Dakota people. Maria enjoyed many friends around the world and here in Ames, where she made her home until her passing from leukemia during the Memorial Day weekend in 2003. We will be speaking with Dr. David Gradwall, an emeritus professor of anthropology at Iowa State University, Mr. Jerome Thompson, state curator of historic sites and director of the Iowa Historical Museum, Ms. Irma White of the Winnebago of Nebraska Nation, and Chris Atkins, naturalist with the Dallas County Conservation Board. Maria Pearson grew up on the banks of the Missouri River near Greenwood, South Dakota, as a member of the Yankton Sioux Nation. She married John Pearson, who worked for the Iowa Department of Transportation at Marney, Iowa, in Cass County, and later moved to Ames in the 1970s. It was during this era that Maria became noted for her guidance concerning Native American remains. When a pioneer cemetery was unearthed, procedures varied between Native American remains and Euro-American or pioneer remains. Here is Dr. David Gradwall.
Welcome to Local Talk.
Glad to be here.
Let's talk about you in Ames just for a few moments. When did you come to Ames?
Came to Ames right out of grad school in 1962. Got a job at Iowa State University. I did have some other offers too, but I wanted to come back to the Midwest. My wife and I had grown up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and my primary interest was plains anthropology, so that fit quite well.
You followed your love of the Midwest, and we're fortunate to have you with us.
I am very fortunate to have been able to spend my career here.
And part of that was looking at the Native community.
Yes, I'm an archaeologist, but To me, if archaeology doesn't relate to real living people in some way, it's not worth much. There are, of course, close connections we can make with some archaeological complexes. With most, they're too far back in the past that we don't know.
What was it like meeting Maria Pearson?
Well, it was very interesting. Now, I first became aware of her in 1971. When the Glenwood controversy was in the newspapers, they were doing salvage archaeology over near the Missouri River near Glenwood, Iowa, and they ran across, superimposed into a Nebraska phase earth lodge that would date, let's say, around 1200 AD. And that was of interest because that culture is the one that I did my dissertation on at Harvard. And they found intersecting into that earth lodge pit burials, some 20 or 24, I forget exactly how many, Euro-Americans buried in coffins, and then a Native American woman in a flex position.
Flex is?
Kind of a fetal position.
Okay.
So Maria was very upset that they had reburied immediately without study the Euro-American skeletons, but they had brought the skeleton of the Native American young woman back to the archaeology lab in Iowa City for a scientific study. I was shocked because I've always described myself as an equal opportunity excavator. With the National Park Service contracts in Sailorville and Red Rock, we did excavate some Native American burials that were going to be destroyed in those reservoirs with permission and funding from the National Park Service. But we also had excavated an early Euro-American pioneer cemetery. So I felt I was an equal opportunity excavator. And so I discussed the issue in class. I thought it was very interesting that nobody cared about the the Euro-American pioneer skeletons. It seems to me that if those individuals were lost, if their names weren't known, and nothing about them, that they ought to study them scientifically. Mm-hmm. And be equal. Either study them all or rebury them all immediately. And my option would be, you know, to study them all. So I had followed the Glenwood controversy very closely and with great interest, because the first time I met her was in 1975. We had an American Indian symposium on campus, and we intentionally had a panel on the reburial controversy. And I had invited Maria Pearson to join us. I'd never met her. And she accepted the invitation, and I was standing in line when the conference began, and I hear this voice behind me saying, "I'm Maria Pearson, the governor's liaison on Indian affairs." And she said it with great authority. And I turned around, and here is this strikingly good-looking woman in a blue flannel suit and wearing a very beautiful beaded medallion. So I just turned around and I said, "I'm David Gradwell. I'm an archaeologist, one of those people you don't like. But we're really happy to have you here at our symposium." And she laughed, and she had a sense of humor, and so did I. Mm-hmm. And as the years went on, we became close associates working on reburial and repatriation issues and became close personal friends. She did many things during her life, but she felt compelled, and part of it by her grandmother, who spoke to her through the rustling cottonwood leaves and at other times, to stand up for her people. And so she took a stand. Now, this was, you know, following a bit on the heels of the Black Power and the Red Power movements, when minority people felt empowered to speak out. So she did it within that context, but it took a lot of courage, because for many times, many years, she sort of stood up alone.
How did it go at that first meeting then?
That panel was very good. There were different opinions expressed. Nobody got mad at each other, but it was a civil conversation. And I think it led to part of archaeologists seeing and recognizing, at least here in Iowa, that there were ethical issues involved in digging up burials.
On a practical sense, and I think it was her husband, John Pearson, who said something happened today that is going to make you pretty upset.
Yes, John Pearson worked for the Highway Commission, and he found out about the Glenwood discoveries through his contact with archaeologists who were working with the Department of Transportation. And that's when Maria put on her best regalia and went into Governor Ray's office and demanded her people's bones back. She told this story often, and I did get her to put it into a tape recorder. I transcribed it and reworked it, and it's in the revised edition of The World's Between Two Rivers, published by the University of Iowa Press.
Well, that'd be something very enlightening to include in our website then also.
Yes, I think so.
As we learn more about this major person of the Ames community. So from the meeting with Governor Ray, that the grievances were aired, and do you recall the outcome of that meeting?
Well, first of all, Governor Ray asked his adjutant, "Do we have her people's bones?" But he pursued it, and I think Governor Ray has a real compassion for cross-cultural matters, bringing in the Southeast Asians and everything. So I think he was a very sympathetic person to these different causes. And ultimately, the bones were studied at the Office of the State Archaeologist in Iowa City, and then they were reburied. And in 1976, the Iowa Burial Code was changed, largely due to the efforts of Maria Pearson, working with archaeologists. And I'm really proud to have been an archaeologist working in Iowa, because I think the professional community here responded, I think, first with shock, but then with understanding. And we have had, ever since, excellent relationships with Native Americans here in Iowa on not just going out and digging up Indian burials without a cause, and if they are encountered accidentally, then Native Americans are consulted with. And usually the Native Americans here in Iowa are more than reasonable. They say, well, if you can't avoid that particular construction project, then excavate them, study them, and rebury them. This was not the case across the country. We anticipated here in Iowa in 1976 the Native American Grave and Repatriation Act, the federal act, which wasn't passed until 1990 or 91. So we were the forerunners there, and I think ethically we were definitely on the wrong side, but I have to tell you, many of our archaeological and physical anthropological colleagues across the country accused us of selling out.
I've also heard, though, that Maria Pearson changed the world.
Well, in many respects, she did. There were others then that came along and were working with her, but she not only addressed the matter nationally through the Society for American Archaeology, the American Anthropological Association, and so forth, where she gave presentations, but she did it on an international scale, particularly working with Larry Zimmerman in the World Congress of Archaeology.
Is there anything else that...
You know, when anthropologists work with other people, whether they're indigenous or not, there's sort of a relationship between the scientist or observer and the person who's providing the information. But I never expected, because it isn't typical, that a person you're working with in that relationship would particularly care about your opinions or practices, because you are the scientist and they are the person being studied. But she didn't view it that way. So we had discussions on Native American religions and Catholicism, because she was involved in the Catholic Church. And I'm not sure that she had ever talked extensively to a person of Jewish faith, which I am. And so we had ongoing discussions, and there were some points of similarity, but I would call them parallelisms, between Judaism and Native American practices. And I used to always tell her, now, Maria, don't tell anybody about this, because they already think Native Americans are the lost tribes of Israel. And I'm from the tribe that did not get lost. But I was particularly touched when Maria went on a peace mission to Israel and Jordan and brought me back a yarmulke, a skull cap, as a present. And I thought it was very touching, first of all, that she would bring me back anything, and secondly, that she would bring me a skull cap, which I had never bought since my family or followers of Reform Judaism, or the more liberal branch, and wearing the yarmulke is optional, and I opt not to wear one.
She was thinking of you.
She was thinking of me. She was a very loyal friend. She also could state her opinion if she thought you were wrong. She also listened, however. In the case of the Northridge burial, right here in Ames.
When was the disturbance? 90.
This was 1991.
91.
Mm-hmm. A burial mound had been discovered, what looked like a burial mound. The geomorphologist did a soil test, and they not only found a human-made soil profile, but their probe struck some bone. So there's a big controversy about what was going to happen there. I was asked to go out and investigate the situation, and I decided that whoever was buried there, that was a burial mound, had started their spirit journey there, and it was my opinion that that person or person should continue their spirit journey where their survivors had placed them. And I made that was my recommendation. I knew that it was basically the decision of the Indian Advisory Board which Maria chaired, and our state archaeologist at the time, Bill Green. And I knew Bill Green would stand solidly behind us. That case, incidentally, went all the way to the Supreme Court. The realtors had brought suit, and the courts found for the Native Americans in that case that that was a pre-existing condition, the burial, and that it could not be disturbed, and that the archaeologists did not have to give the realtors any compensation for the fact that that building lot would not be built upon. So then I was hired by the realtors, who I think weren't happy that we were finding things there. Maria told me, she said, well, rather than be afraid of Gradwell, you know, have him do it because, you know, you need to know whether there's anything there or not. And if it's there, he'll tell you. So my students went out. I was recovering from surgery at the time and couldn't be in the field for any extensive time. And they found a second burial, not in a mound, but someone whose grave had been dug into those beautiful bluffs up above the creek there. So then there was this controversy of what to do. Again, that area was prohibited from construction. Shirley Shermer from the Office of the State Archaeologist came up and said, yes, that they were human bones. I was glad to know that my analysis was correct, but Shirley is the expert in that area. And their question was what to do. They could have reburied those in one of the four reburial cemeteries in Iowa. And again, my suggestion was, well, whatever it is, this person started his spirit journey there. And so Maria trusted me and a graduate student, Jeff Berland, to do the reburial. We went to her house. She instructed us to make some tobacco offerings stitched in red cloth, and even with my pathetic sewing skill, I could do that. And we went to her house, and she smudged us. She purified us
with sweet grass. Uh-huh.
The smoke. She instructed us to put some sage behind our ear when we went there, and exactly what to do, and to do it, and then come back and report to her what we had done. And again, I can't tell you the gratefulness I had that she trusted us to do that. She did not like to be around burials and certainly didn't want to handle the bones. But, you know, professionally that is something we do. But she trusted us to do the right thing. And I have to tell you, one of my colleagues said to me, well, did you really, you know, put the sage behind your ear? And I said, of course, why wouldn't I? When I go into an Orthodox synagogue, I put a head covering on. And when I go into a Buddhist shrine or a Muslim house of worship, I take off my shoes. Those are just common courtesies in observing what is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Is there anything else, Dr. Gradwell?
I could tell Maria stories on and on and on, but I think this sort of gives a profile of this remarkable person who you're fortunate enough to know and who lived in Ames, and it's a part of our local history as well as state and national history.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, and I appreciate your doing this program on Maria.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, and today we're talking about Maria Pearson, a mother, a member of the Turtle Clan of the Yankton Nation, and friend to many around the world, and here in Ames, where she made her home in the 1970s. Another compatriot of Maria Pearson is Jerome Thompson. He grew up in Ames and wanted to be included in presenting Maria Pearson's life to you, our listeners.
Welcome to Local Talk, Jerome Thompson.
Good morning.
And your position here at the historical building?
With the State Historical Society, my current position is state curator, and I'm also administrator of our historic sites. First time I met Maria was at the Toolsboro Mounds National Historic Landmark site in Loisa County, which was one of the sites I was responsible for. And that would have been in probably 1984. I'd started here in 83 in the fall, and then in the spring I was doing a site visit and discovered that some ground disturbance, probably from a groundhog or something like that, had gotten into one of the mounds.
And that site is overlooking the Mississippi.
Right, down in Loisa County. And Maria made a site visit there, along with Shirley Shermer, who is director of the burials program, who recently retired with the Iowa Office of the State Archaeologist, to sort of advise me on how best to make repairs to the mound disturbance. See, Iowa, and of course Maria is largely responsible for this, was one of the first states in the country to establish a Native American Burials Protection Act, which is part of Iowa law. And, in the early 1970s, actually when I was a student at Iowa State, there was, quite a bit of movement with the American Indian movement for looking at Native American rights. The State Museum, in the 1960s, there had been burials excavated out in West Des Moines at what is now a retirement home. And the museum staff at that time were following pretty much standard museum practice or archaeological practice. They went out and there were a number of the burials where they encased them in plaster jackets and did partial excavation. They moved them to the museum and put them on display. And then in the early 1970s, there was action that was, we don't exhibit your ancestors' bones, why are you doing it with ours? And that dynamic, that tension between what was viewed as, scientific inquiry versus cultural sensitivity had not quite come to the point where it exists today.
There was growth and development culturally.
It took decades. Actually, before the Federal Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act of 1990, Iowa was basically working where human remains that were in the museum's collection or any place in the state would go to the state archaeologist, to the burials program, and through Maria's efforts and Dwayne Anderson, who was later state archaeologist, they established four reburial grounds in around the state in the four cardinal directions, so that those remains that were could be documented to be found in a particular area would go to one of those cemeteries for reburial. What changed in 1990 was the federal law. And that federal law required that all museums or institutions that receive federal funding, which would include colleges and universities, if they had human remains in those collections, they were to inventory them and share those culturally affiliated tribes, and that was the process where, I worked with Maria and the State Archaeologist's Office for repatriation and reburial of some of the human remains that had been in the State Historical Society's collections.
Were there any specific stories or good example of that cooperative working relationship?
Well, the Blood Run National Historic Landmark site, which is up in Lyon County in northwest Iowa, Maria was very influential. We acquired portions of that property in 1986, and because there is a Dakota, Omaha, a number of tribes called that home up in the 1700s, and Maria came to bat on a couple of occasions when there were graveling operations and other kinds of things that were potentially threatening parts of the site that even weren't owned by the state, course, now that particular site in South, it's in both Iowa and South Dakota. South Dakota State Parks just dedicated the Good Earth at Blood Run site in South mm-hmm. Dakota. And the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Parks Bureau has received funding to begin doing some master planning for the Iowa portions of that particular site.
Some of that early work from the 80s then is still carrying on.
Oh, absolutely.
And so her influence is,
yep.
is
and,
certainly
you know,
being
there are different people, you know, some people yep. who may or may not have known Maria, but they've all known her probably by reputation, who are involved with their own tribal historic yep. preservation officers, would want to attribute some of that influence to Maria's work. She was yeah. well known. Well, you know, Maria's story is an important Iowa story. And mm-hmm. Even in one of our children's publications in the 1990s, Maria Pearson was stated as one of those influential Iowa women.
Exactly.
You know, just anecdotally, I think it was about 1989, I was invited out to do a program for the staff at the Pennsylvania Historical Museum Commission in Harrisburg. And after that staff meeting, I got a tour of the Pennsylvania State Museum. And in one of the galleries, there was this exhibition that was dealing with highway archaeology. Interesting topic. And then in a display in which, you know, you could see diorama background kinds of things of construction activities and an archaeologist with a, you know, transit out there shooting levels and whatnot. There was this area that was actually excavated in the floor and covered in glass, and it was a human burial that had been moved into the museum. And because of Maria's influence, those types of things went off exhibition in Iowa in the 1970s, and here probably about almost 15 years later, the practice was still happening in a Pennsylvania museum. And I asked the curator colleague, said, you know, does this create any distress among, you know, any of the Native American community here? And he goes, no, because they're all out west. I was kind of dumbstruck by that particular comment and just let it go. He definitely influenced a, you know, at least ways in my world in historic preservation, historic site preservation, definitely changed, you know, how we look at things and how we move forward where when interpreting, you know, a culture that is not mine.
And that influence is still being realized, it sounds. Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Truman Thompson.
Good to see you.
Yes, sir.
Let's explore Maria's life with a close friend, Irma White.
Welcome to Local Talk.
Thank you.
I'm going to be talking about Maria Pearson and one of her teachings. When I asked her one time if she liked to be referred to as a Native American or Indian or a First Nation person, and she advised me, just ask what nation we honor. What is your nation, Irma?
I am Winnebago of Nebraska.
Winnebago of Nebraska, I see. Have you been a longtime resident of the Midwest?
Yes. I have lived here in the Midwest area for all my life.
Uh-huh. And a lot of that was in Ames?
Pretty much half my life was in Ames.
Do you recall the first time you ever met Maria Pearson?
Met her face to face? Yes, I recall that day. It was in 1982. I was at a powwow in Mankato. And after hearing her voice over a partition for a number of years and her demanding to talk, Irma White, and not finding me in the office all those times, I went up to her and I said, Maria Pearson? She says, yes. I said, I'm Irma White. And she said, oh, it's so good to see you finally. And I had finally decided that I needed to make my acquaintance with her formally.
Mm-hmm. Was she hoping to receive some help from you?
Yes. She was told by some spiritual leaders to find me and that I would be her helper. So I became her helper.
Let's go ahead and talk about what are the responsibilities of a helper?
Well, it's not gopher.
It's not gopher. Yeah.
Don't go for this, go for that. No.
Okay.
Helping her with her journey as far as the spiritual journey is concerned. She needed help with talking with various people throughout the state of Iowa that were Native American. And I would go along with her and be supportive of all of the things that she was trying to accomplish within each community. I helped with a number of programs that she was involved with, like with the governor's conference on American Indian alcoholism program, as well as being on the governor's advisory board on American Indian issues. I also was a close friend of hers. Throughout the years, I was her right-hand person, so helped her with the Prairie Awakening and quite a few other things that, as far as women's were concerned.
I see. Things that were important to Maria kind of became important to Irma also.
Yes.
What were some of the issues that would, at the different settlements or different areas, would any stories that come to mind?
Well, like in Sioux City, it was rent and finding a simple thing as trying to get help with utilities. The Native peoples were always asked for Social Security cards, ID cards, birth certificates, and those things, if they're on a limited budget, how are you going to pay for it? And not being able to get the assistance that they needed with those particular things. There was always, like, substance abuse, physical abuse, various other issues that, you know, the normal community struggle with.
Struggle and challenges that mm-hmm. any community had. Well, good for you, and thank you for that service, and thank you for all that work. My goodness.
The other things that Maria was really involved with and very, very serious about were the repatriations, the alcohol awareness that Native Americans still suffer today. You know, education had always been in the forefront of Maria's mind to help with our younger generations to continue getting that education and educating not only our generations to come, but other people that are non-Indian family, as she would like to call them. Mm-hmm. So I find myself, you know, asking, what would Maria do in this case if I find myself backed up against the wall thinking, okay, what to do next? What would Maria do? And then I would think, running moccasins. She did not run away from, she ran to whatever the issue was.
Running moccasins, running towards.
Yes.
The challenges as opposed to running away.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. that's quite a statement.
Oh, thank you.
I would like to, for all the listeners to realize that you work together,
yes,
shoulder to shoulder. It may have had the appearance that you were her assistant, but it seems like you were both walking on your own two feet in a good way, working with each other. That is something that I think is real important for me to share with you in that regard, that she was quite a person, but so are you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. She was someone who could bridge any gap, gender, age. She was someone who could get people talking about various issues. I remember one time that It had snowed the day before, and we were to meet the Meskwakis over at Tama at a restaurant. And we had walked in, and the person that was waiting on us to get there burst out laughing, and here comes the, was that John Belushi and both of us come bouncing in there with black coats on and hats on and shades on. It. Here comes the blues women.
The blues women, yeah.
She always liked to be somebody who just bursts in a place, you know, and make it known that she is there. And she was always very cheerful about a lot of things. And when it came to be serious, oh gosh, you could be dead serious.
I'm sure glad I could have this time with you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Irma of the Winnebago Nation.
Mm-hmm.
Woman of the universe, I guess.
I wouldn't say that.
You would, oh, excuse me.
I wouldn't say that. My grandfather was always someone who I turned to for advice when I was young, you know. And one of the things when we got ready to leave the reservation, he said, when you come back, you need to bring back something that is good. And every time I think about buying something, it makes me think twice as to whether or not I really need it, because when I'm getting ready to go home, I'll have to get rid of it, because it may be good out here, but back there where there's no electricity, no running water, no garbage disposal place that can take our garbage wherever, mm-hmm. on the reservation, you know. So going off grid would be good. Being self-contained would be great. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that I could think of that I could take back with me is education. Knowledge.
Your education and your knowledge. And where's your home?
My mother raised us on the Omaha Indian Reservation, which is just south of there.
And what town in Nebraska?
Macy.
Macy?
Yeah, Macy was the nearest town to us, and that's like 5 miles north of us, my grandfather's land is. And so looking at that, when I go back, mm-hmm. I better have all kinds of knowledge, all kinds of education, yeah. To be able to pass on to our generations to come.
Thank you, Irma.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Washtelo.
Washtelo.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, and today we're talking about Maria Pearson, a mother, a member of the Turtle Clan of the Yankton Nation, and friend to many around the world, and here in Ames, where she made her home in the 1970s. We've learned some of Maria Pearson's work included a Prairie Awakening celebration held each Saturday after Labor Day in Dallas County. And here to discuss his link to Maria Pearson is Chris Adkins, naturalist with the Dallas County Conservation Board.
Welcome to Local Talk.
Good to see you again, Pat.
I really enjoy working with you. Why don't you give the listeners some of your background? I understand you were a high school science teacher?
Yeah, I started out, Pat. I was born in Central Iowa, small town of Dexter. My dad and grandparents ran a grocery store there, so I grew up banging around out in the Raccoon River Valley, and as a kid growing up, really didn't know what I was headed for and where my journey was going to take me. It's interesting now to look back at family photo albums, and I'm always the kid knee-deep in mud holding a turtle or a frog, and I think my mom could have told you where I was headed, but I didn't know, Pat, and so ended up at Central College and had some great professors down there, Maureen Danks, Dr. Bowles, John Bowles, that you probably knew, small mammal biologist.
Yeah,
Dr.
quite a bad Huffman. Biologist there. And it's Pella, Central College.
Yeah, Central College at Pella, yeah. And I had every intent when I was there to have a good time playing football with Coach Skipper for 4 years, and then I'd married a woman who I'd entertained the idea that we were going to move to Alaskan homestead because I was going to get the heck out of this. There was nothing left yet here to save or to be a part of. And I had one of our assistant coaches on the football team, Pat. His name was Dr. Van Hoven. got to know me, and about my junior year, he said to me, Chris, you rather eloquently and frequently profess your love for all things wild, so why did you quit? And I said, well, I didn't quit anything. What are you talking about, Reverend? And he said, you're giving up. You're leaving. You've told me that as soon as you're done here, you're out of here. And he said, I thought you were a fighter. I thought you would stay and try to fix things instead of leaving. So I got into a long conversation with him and decided the way that you can fix things maybe is to try and influence the way people think. And so at that point, I think there were like 3 naturalists in the state. That was not an option. So I went into formal education and taught biology and anatomy and physiology, botany at the high school level, and ecology. And
now, was that at Earlham?
I started out at North Polk for 4 years and then was at Earlham for 12. And about the last 4 or 5 years I was at Earlham, Dallas County Conservation was really coming into its own. Jeff Logston had become the director. Larry Gold, who's now the director over at Johnson County, was a naturalist. And so I was kind of his proving grounds. Larry developed his environmental education program with me as a guinea pig, and we did anything and everything. I think my administrators at Earlham thought that I had become employed by Dallas County long before I did, but I remember the initial meeting with Larry when he called all teachers in the county that were interested to come out to the Nature Center, and it ended up being he and I. And we sat and talked, and I thought, this is a very interesting guy, and someday I think I'll work for these guys. And then some 6-8 years later, when Larry moved up in the department and some positions changed, he said to me, have you ever thought about jumping the fence and getting out of formal ed and becoming a naturalist? And I said, yeah. So I went through that process, and for the last 18 years now, I've got to call this place home. And it was a lot of fun because it's the place I grew up and then grew up again, Pat. So, yeah.
So the Raccoon River watershed has been your home, and now it's your place of employment.
Yeah.
I guess your office, your outdoor office.
Yeah, if you can call it employment. I always say that, you know, I hope our director's not listening, but I'd do this for free, even if they wouldn't pay me. I mean, it's more of a advocation than a vocation for me.
And then it seems like your work in the natural world, there was a lot of prairie being established around Iowa, and then today, talking about Maria Pearson, how did you meet the Yankton woman from Greenwood, South Dakota?
Oh, Pat, you know, that's on your journey. Sometimes there's a fork in the trail, and you really don't even consciously know you're taking that fork. But that encounter with Maria, I cannot imagine what my teaching endeavors would have been like if I hadn't have taken that turn. Met her, developed a friendship with her, had her as a mentor, and had her introduce me to all these other people from First Nations, and an opportunity to work with those elders.
When did you meet Maria?
First time I personally met Maria, Pat, was when she came down to talk about being involved in an event called Prairie Awakening.
And that's the first Saturday after Labor Day in September.
Right.
Each year.
Yeah, and it's just a celebration in the prairie, and again, it's to return people to the prairie, and the conduit to help them make the connections has always been, for the 18 years that we've done it, the inclusion of drumming and singing and storytelling and dancing, and not just passively. The audience gets a chance to participate in that with First Peoples.
And it was that Prairie Awakening that brought Maria Pearson to
Dallas. So she came down, and it was that invite to help us develop that and help us connect with people in the First Nations community that would be willing to come back and share those stories. And so I had the Nature Center set up for an owl prowl. I had owl mounts and parts and things all about. And I opened the door to that. She took one step in, and she saw ghosts. And she stepped back, and she said, who's doing this? And I said, well, it's me. We've got an owl program. And she said, come with me. And she took me outside, and it was cold January day. And she interrogated me. I mean, seriously interrogated me for like 20 minutes. And when she got done, she looked at me, and she said, okay, Chris, you're an okay guy. And I said, I'm glad you got to that point. I kind of like to think that, but I said, what is it? What was all this? And she explained that in the Lakota worldviews, owls are usually viewed as the dark side of the spiritual world, and anyone who's associated with them is probably in that position also. And Maria later told me that mere contact with an owl feather could be a lethal experience for her. And so to see me in a room full of owls really questioned her. And she told me then years later, she said, I should tell you what you said that day. I told her about how by teaching with owls and sharing wildness through their eyes, connecting to an audience eyes, you know, I'd learned that they were a much greater teacher than I was ever going to be. And it was an opportunity to put that teacher in front of people that was such a gift. And so the return of that gift for me was every time I see a dead raptor on the road, much to the chagrin of my wife and daughters when they were growing up, I would stop and move it off the road and set it somewhere and offer a little tobacco and apologize for this world we live in, that we think we need to go so fast that we take these lives so casually and leave them discarded about. Yeah. And I told her how just that summer I'd picked up a great horn owl and set it aside and stopped for a moment and said a prayer. And then I had driven home, and as I got out in the timber where I live in the Raccoon River Valley, I stepped out of my vehicle, and there was a real loud vocalization right on the back of my neck. And it was midday, and I turned around, and here was a great horned owl just staring me down, Pat, and gave another big vocalization that was very atypical. It's not a call that I'm used to hearing out of that bird. And I looked up, and I said to him, I'm sorry too, brother. I agree with you. This is a bad day. And Maria told me when I told her that, she said, I knew you were an all right guy. And so she said, some people have a different relationship with owls, and you're one of them. And so you see the good in them, and I think you can bring good out of that. So from the upshot of that, what happened, Pat, was is that we explained to Maria what we were trying to do, and she embraced this idea of bringing First Peoples back and having a celebration. And so it was through her help that she and Larry and I and Howard Crow Eagle traveled around the Midwest to reservations the next two or three summers, making connections with people that Maria knew and knew would be great educators to invite to the celebration. And every one of them has a story similar to Maria, where there was this life-changing opportunity that was presented to you. If you're listening, if you're receptive to this, here's a story you need to remember. And, you know, the interesting thing, I mentioned Orville earlier, a number of things that have been epiphanies in my teaching, Pat, go back to things that he shared. And another thing along with this step inside the story and experience that memory was, he said, you need to remember that as a teacher, you're not teaching anybody anything, which is a little bit humbling when you think about it. And he said, you're only helping them to remember things that they've forgotten. And so anything touches on what Maria and Prairie Awakening is about. It is that invitation to remember something. I have seen that happen to so many people in the prairie, that they remember something, and it's like they just found an old friend. They always knew this. They just forgot they knew. That peace that comes over you as you're sitting there in a wild place and you're listening to that flute music as the sun goes down, or you're dancing and for the first time you realize, hey, I am dancing on the beat of that drum. You know, now what is that beat? That beat sounds kind of like a heartbeat. And so, you know, that remembrance of it's humbling, because you realize, yeah, I don't have to teach anybody anything. I just got to get them to remember these things they already know. And that's what Maria was so good at. She helped all of us remember things that we once knew we just seemed to have forgotten.
Yeah, so I think the Prairie Awakening has become a wonderful memorial activity. Each Labor Day, the Prairie Awakening, Dallas County, southwest of Adel, on the Keene Conservation Area. We'll look forward
Raccoon
to it.
River Watershed.
Yeah, the Raccoon right River Watershed.
Yeah, I always tell people we're part of the Bemis Moraine Tribe, and they look at you, I've never heard of that one. And So it's the biggest feature on the landscape, that terminus moraine of the Des Moines Lobe of the Wisconsin Glacier. And so it left that mark just north of the celebration grounds. And it's a big story there, one we can really remember. And so, you know, we were talking about this wannabe stuff, and that's something else that was shared, Pat, was that a native, by First Peoples definition, is not a birthright. The way it's been explained to me is it's not a birthright. It is something that you acquire as you become a person of the place. And so if you can become a person of your place, you have the opportunity to be a native to that place. And that's a huge goal for people to remember so well of where they are and know the stories of their place to the point that they can say, this is my place. Wendell Berry says it best, and he says, if you don't know where you are, you don't know who you are. So this is an invitation, you know, that goes all the way back to the taproots of Maria accepting our invitation to learn where we were. And, you know, what bigger trail do we all walk, Pat, than trying to figure out who we are? You know, I'm sure you and I are still on that trail, brother. So, but to know where you are will get you to know who you are. And so, thanks, Maria.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. Today, we have been discussing Maria Pearson, a mother and a member of the Turtle Clan of the Yankton Nation of the Dakota people. Maria dedicated her life in repatriating the sacred remains of Native people. She was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize for this work, which we will present in a future show. Today, we have been talking with David Gradwell, Anthropology Emeritus Professor at Iowa State University, Jerome Thompson, Iowa State Curator and Administrator of Historic Sites, Irma White of the Winnebago of Nebraska Nation, and Chris Adkins, Naturalist of the Dallas County Conservation Board,
and member of the Bemis Moraine Tribe of Central Iowa.
Technical assistance has been provided by Rick Morrison.
The native music is The Third Stone, performed by Lauren Zephyr, Chief of the Yankton Nation of the Dakota people.
And our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can listen to this show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoyfm.org. And you will see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. You will also find lists of our guests and contact information to the organizations as we speak with and other resources mentioned on our shows. And there's live streaming now available. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2978. 292-2978. Or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org. Your participation as audience makes KHOY possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.